Hello, and welcome to Twerpcast episode 67, Beastcast. Not to be confused with X-Men First Cast, Hank McCoy. This time, we'll be discussing all things Vincent and Kath in Beauty and the Beast. I'd like to introduce you to executive producer and 2012 Olympian gold medalist in the most beastly category, Jim Caswell.
And he's Doug Zeitlin. I'll avoid the cracks about him looking like Vincent. Not because I'm avoiding insulting him, but because Vincent is a pretty boy now. And joining us is Ken Halloran, the Mrs. Potts of our group.
In the spirit of Bionic Cast, Kit Cast, Bee Cast, and Angels Cast, we're featuring a show with some history behind it. And if this holds the trend, it won't make a full season of episodes. Hopefully. Why don't you get us started with a little background on Beauty and the Beast?
The first rendition of the tale was La Belle et la Bête by Gabrielle Suzanne Barbeau de Villeneuve in 1740.
The original version went into greater depth of Beast's and Belle's backgrounds, and also had a larger cast of characters. Belle had sisters, was the daughter of a king and a good fairy. Beast's mother was a royal who had defended the kingdom and turned him over to an evil fairy who tried to seduce him when he grew up. She cursed him because he rejected her advances. Fortunately, a lot of the soap opera stuff got cut out when it was abridged by... Ken, you want to help me out on this one, too?
Jean-Marie Le Prince de Beaumont.
In 1756. It cut out a lot of the family stuff and stuff that was really kind of twisted, like somebody who raises you hitting on you.
And the talking statuary.
Over the years, several people have pointed out the fact that there are several common themes between Beauty and the Beast and The Phantom of the Opera, but the latter is not believed to be based on the former.
I think that's interesting. I really hate Phantom of the Opera. I mean, a show that's about a pedophile multi-murderer being in love with a beautiful young girl just really doesn't appeal to me.
How young? A girl. I mean, if he's a pedophile, why should he be falling in love with her unless she's like, you know, 7?
I believe in the story she was like 14, 15.
There's a different word for that. It's not pedophilia, but I don't remember what it's actually called.
And actually, in that time period, I don't necessarily know if it would have been as frowned upon as it is now.
I still don't find him very sympathetic. I think the story loses all of its meaning if you don't find the main character sympathetic. I mean, what are they going to do next? Jack the Ripper the musical?
I've been waiting for Mein Kampf, actually.
Is that the serious version of Springtime for Hitler?
Not necessarily. It doesn't have to be the serious version.
Definitely get sued by Mel Brooks.
Now, Beauty and the Beast has been used over and over and over again, like most good fairy tales.
I think you mean most public domain fairy tales.
Well, that too. Some of the many versions of Beauty and the Beast in literature include Beastly by Alex Finn in 2007, Beauty, a retelling of the story of Beauty and the Beast by Robin McKinley in 1978, Belle, a retelling of Beauty and the Beast by Cameron Doakey in 2008.
Ooh, my favorite, Beauty and the Werewolf by Mercedes Lackey in 2011.
Crazy Beautiful by Lauren Barats Logstead. East by Edith Patow, which puts a Norse spin on it in 2003. The Fire Rose by Mercedes Lackey in 1995. Heart's Blood by Juliet Marlier, which is set during the Norman invasion.
Ooh, here's another good one. Some say rose, it is a flower. Isn't that the name of that song?
The Rose, a novel based on Beauty and the Beast by Jennifer Baker. Ice by Sarah Beth Durst. Sun and Moon, Ice and Snow by Jessica Day George. A Wolf at the Door and Other Retold Fairy Tales by Ellen Datlow and Terry Windling. Beast by Donna Jo Napoli, set in Persia, released in 2000. Rose and Thorns, Beauty and the Beast, retold by Chris Ann Wolfe. Rose and the Beast, Fairy Tales, retold by Francesca Leah Block in 2000. Tiger's Curse by Colleen Hook. Angelfish by Lawrence Yep. Tiger's Bride and The Courtship of Mr. Lion by Angela Carter. Beauty and the Beast, the story retold by Laura E. Richards in 1886.
What about the Marvel comic book? There was a Marvel comic book entitled Beauty and the Beast.
We said literature.
Oh, okay. No, there was. It starred Shadowcat and Hank McCoy.
Okay, I'll take your word for it. Now, that was just in literature. It's also been done multiple times on the silver screen.
Now keep in mind, we're not doing the porn version.
La Belle et la Bête in 1946. The Scarlet Flower, a 1952 animated feature film. A 1962 version that had the Beast as a prince transformed into a werewolf. In 1987, a musical live version, which was more comparable to the authoritative Beaumont version than others. Walt Disney produced a musical animated film in 1991, directed by Kirk Wise and Barry Truesdale. Diane Eskenazi produced Beauty and the Beast, another animated version, in 1993. It must have been one of those cheapy direct-to-video trying to rain on Disney's parade types.
Yes, very much so.
Let's see, a 2003 version was alternately known as Beauty and the Beast and Blood of Beasts. Robert Bocage's 2008 Spike was described as Angela Carter rewriting La Belle et la Bête as an episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Beastly, starring Alex Pettyfer and Vanessa Hudgens, and based on the novel by the same name, was released on March 18th in 2011.
And according to my niece, the book was much better than the movie.
Okay, that's usually the case. And then on TV, George C. Scott turned in a made-for-TV rendition in 1976. He played Beauty. In 1984, Shelley Duvall's Fairy Tale Theater aired Beauty and the Beast.
She played Beast.
HBO's Happily Ever After Fairy Tales for Every Child did a version of the story set in Equatorial Africa. A variation of the story was incorporated into an episode of the ABC TV series Once Upon a Time entitled Skin Deep, in which Beauty slash Belle is played by Emily DeRoven, and the Beast in this series' version of Rumpelstiltskin as played by Robert Carlyle. And I'm also going to mention that Walt Disney did ultimately release a stage version of Beauty and the Beast based on their animated film.
So, Beauty and the Beast has been all over the place. Probably the two best-known versions of it, though, are Walt Disney's animated film and the 1987 modernization of Beauty and the Beast, starring Ron Perlman as Vincent and Linda Hamilton as Catherine Chandler.
Although I will say it's also a very commonly used phrase in the media, especially, you know, entertainment tabloids. Anytime you have a woman who's hanging out with a guy who's not as pretty as she is, the phrase gets used a lot.
Very true.
This one's I'd like to see it the other way, where the guy is very handsome and the girl's kind of on the frumpy side, then they label it Beauty and the Beast just the other way, just once.
That's because any guy that could be described as a beauty probably wouldn't be interested in a frumpy, ugly woman. He probably wouldn't be interested in a woman, but...
Well, there are pretty voice straight actors out there.
Brad Pitt comes to mind, and his Beast, admittedly, is not ugly on the outside.
Oh, what's his face? Robert Pattinson. You know, all their friends are insisting she's a Beast right now.
You know, I have a theory on this, because number one, Kristen Stewart, K-Stu, can't act her way out of a paper bag. I mean, she is absolutely horrendous. She gives a bad name to talentless hacks. Sorry, all you talentless hacks out there. I'm really not comparing you to Kristen Stewart. I mean, you at least try. And to go even further, Kristen Stewart is not attractive. She kind of looks like a boy. She has no figure.
Okay, maybe Pattinson is gay.
I have a theory. She has a magic vagina. Because everyone who has touched it is deeply in love with her.
Maybe that's where she saves up all of her acting for, in the sack.
Actually, that assessment of her acting does bother me just a little bit, Doug. One very simple reason. This implies that you've actually seen things with her in it.
Yes. I unfortunately forced myself through Snow White and the Woodsman.
Now, I remember when she was much, much younger, and she was in Catch That Kid. And the only thing that I can figure is that sometime between then and now, she's had some sort of a stroke that has completely shut down all of the muscles in her face so that she can't portray a facial expression.
That's interesting, because it just happened to her. Just because you're a child actress doesn't mean you automatically lose the ability to act when you grow up. Perfect example is Anne Hathaway. You know, I really wasn't interested in The Princess Diaries. I could care less. But Catwoman was awesome!
I think that goes back to that whole Kristen Stewart doesn't have a chest, doesn't have hips.
Yeah, Anne Hathaway looks like a woman now.
But we digress.
Quite off the mark, actually.
That was a huge rabbit trail.
No, this was no rabbit trail. We are saying Kristen Stewart is a beast, Robin Pattinson is a beauty.
In the 1987 TV show, though, Vincent was a mutated half-man, half-lion. Catherine Chandler was a assistant district attorney. And at one point, Vincent had saved her, which caused this emotional slash psychological bond between the two of them.
And she had a magic vagina.
One of the other advantages that the show had was a rather extensive supporting cast. You had Roy Dotrice playing Father, who was the leader of this underground city that Vincent and a bunch of homeless people lived in. It was established in the catacombs underneath New York City and provided sort of a fantasy-type feel within the confines of a quote-unquote real-life city. It was because of this that the show was able to successfully merge action, mystery, fantasy, and romance. Now, one of the other interesting things about this is that while Ron Perlman had been in a few other things here and there, this was really his breakout performance that turned him into a character actor leading man.
Those two words usually don't go together. Usually when you're the character actor, you're not the leading man and vice versa.
Right, but he's actually one of those few people who have actually managed to pull it off. Ever since then, he's had things like the Hellboy movies, and right now he's on Sons of Anarchy as the protagonist.
Yeah, but there he's more leading man and less character actor, I think.
That's because he got tired of wearing the makeup all the time.
Well, that and the fact that he's got a biker face.
True enough.
Yeah, that is one of the cases where he's got a face for radio for an actor.
But he's a really good actor. He's one of those ones that doesn't actually have to be good-looking to be good at what he's doing.
Ah, he's an actor.
Yes, and he's able to capture other characters besides Ron Perlman.
That would have been between the two Terminator films for Linda Hamilton, then.
Correct.
I knew someone in high school who looked like her. It's kind of weird, since Demi Hamilton obviously has the same last name as Linda Hamilton. To this day, I haven't figured out if they're related or not. Demi denies it, but...
Well, at the time, Linda Hamilton was a successful actress, and would you really want to be compared to a successful actress or potentially hit up for loans because you have a relative who is wealthy? At this particular point in her career, she was definitely the bigger name of the two. She had her own cult following because of Terminator, but as you said, she hadn't hit Terminator 2 yet, so she wasn't earning the really big bucks.
As far as her cult status goes, this just cemented anything that had begun with Terminator. She already had those fans, plus anybody who was watching Beauty and the Beast. This really increased her popularity tremendously.
Now, speaking from personal experience, I love this show. I mean, I was 17 when it came out. It had the fantasy, it had the adventure.
It had the wish fulfillment that a guy with, shall we say, self-esteem issues can win a girl that looks like Linda Hamilton.
Yeah, there was some of that in there, too. And, as I said, they just created this wonderful world and wonderful environment within the story for Vincent to survive and thrive and grow in. So, the fact that I have such fond memories of the 1987 TV show is one of the many reasons why them doing a remake of said show for the CW really sets my nerves on edge.
So, is that why we're doing this?
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to say it was just because it's going to be on the CW, but pretty much there's not a network that can really handle this show. Put it on a traditional, maybe Fox, but Fox doesn't like sci-fi.
Fox would put it on Friday night at 8 o'clock.
Sci-fi channel? Well, you know, they wouldn't give it any budget.
The sci-fi channel would just ruin it. Sci-fi channel does not have any A-list programming.
It doesn't have any C-list programming.
Yeah, and unless Vincent was taking a chair to the face, it just wouldn't fit on their programming.
The BBC might be able to handle it well.
I would like to see BBC or BBC America take the show on.
They'd have to make a lot of major overhauls, which we'll get to in a second. But yes, I think BBC America could do it properly. But it's not on BBC America. It's on the CW. Beauty and the Beast stars Jay Ryan as Vincent.
Who?
Jack Ryan's son, from the Tom Clancy books, don't you know?
Oh, okay.
But the question is, which Jack Ryan? The good Jack Ryan? The okay Jack Ryan? Or the, wait, Jack Ryan was in that? Jack Ryan.
Who is the third Jack Ryan in there?
There's actually four now, but I believe the third one that you're talking about is Ben Affleck.
You are correct, sir.
When the hell was Ben Affleck Jack Ryan?
After Harrison Ford stopped being Jack Ryan.
Oh, of course, because that's such a natural progression.
It was supposed to be a prequel to the Harrison Ford movie.
Wouldn't that be a prequel to Hunt for Red October, which was before the Harrison Ford movies?
Yes, but it was set in modern day.
It was really messed up, and you cannot give the entire blame to Ben Affleck. It was just a messed up movie.
So, getting back to it, J. Ryan plays Vincent. In this interpretation, Vincent turns into a beast when he becomes enraged. Otherwise, he has this horrible, disfiguring little tiny scar on his chin. As we said, CW, everybody's beautiful.
Okay, but if he's got a scar on his chin, that does answer which Jack Ryan he's the son of.
Once again, the character of Catherine Chandler has the veteran actor of the show. Unfortunately, the actress is a veteran from another CW show, even though it was one that Doug and I enjoyed. Catherine Chandler is played by Kristen Kruick, who played Lana Lang on Smallville.
I like Kristen Kruick. I think she's perfectly suited for acting on the CW.
That is not necessarily high praise.
What I got of that is that she's good-looking and doesn't act all that well.
Well, yeah, I was kind of implying that. But I really enjoyed her as Lana Lang. I thought that she was very good at playing the romantic interest with Tom Long.
Another actor who's pretty and apparently straight.
Yeah, if they wanted to get the good female actress from Smallville, they would have gotten Allison Mack.
If they wanted the good-looking actress from Smallville, they would have gotten Allison Mack.
I always liked Annette O'Toole. You know, Clark, your mom's kind of hot.
Well, she was. Well, she is.
And I've seen Cat People.
In this rendition, Catherine Chandler isn't an assistant district attorney. Now she's a hard-boiled homicide detective.
Oh, they left her in the boiling water for 3 minutes.
Once again, though, she gets saved by Vincent and often partners up with him to solve mysteries. Only now she can be seen in public with him without people going, hey, what's with the lion dude?
You know, I'm really just thinking since the madder Beast gets, the stronger Beast gets, if he's going to turn green.
Yes. Unfortunately, he doesn't turn into the Hulk. He turns into the She-Hulk.
Is he actually supposed to become lion-like again?
Nobody knows. They haven't released any images of him after he's been transformed. They've just been releasing the pretty boy images.
Ah, of course. Maybe they'll reuse the angel makeup.
That would fit.
Don't make me angry, Catherine. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
But in addition to getting rid of Vincent's deformity...
Which kind of removes that whole beast part of the show.
Yeah. But it enables CW to live up to their everybody must be pretty rule.
Really can't call the show Beauty and the Penis.
No matter how big of a he is.
Well, you said she's going to be a dick. Hard-boiled, in fact.
That just sounds painful. So, not only do they get rid of the bestial nature of the Beast, you don't have the character of Father, which gets rid of most of Vincent's opportunities to have a normal life, even though he's not normal. You're getting rid of the catacombs, which makes you lose a good chunk of the fantasy aspect of the story.
So, basically, it's a detective show with a weak gimmick.
That's the way I read it, yeah.
I think I'll keep watching Castle.
I think I'm going to start watching Castle. It's going to be going into reruns on TNT.
That would be a very good call on your part. Castle is an excellent show with an excellent actor and an excellent actress. Good storytelling.
What are you trying to do, jinx it?
It's going into its sixth season. It doesn't fall under the rules of the Kiss of Death show.
Oh, okay.
We mentioned that Kristen Kruick was on Smallville. Do you think that she has the chops to carry an entire show herself?
Not by herself, no. As part of an ensemble, absolutely. But not as the show, no.
Yeah, when I heard that she was the lead character, because Jay Ryan, I've never heard of him before. So he's pretty much a nobody. No offense to him or anything, just never heard of him. And I remember the last thing that Kristen Kruick tried to carry on her own.
Street Fighter, The Legend of Chun-Li?
Exactly.
You know, I actually like the Raul Julia Street Fighter film. I mean, it's horrible, but I will plead guilty to liking it. That said, I've actually gotten out of my way to avoid the Kristen Kruick Chun-Li film.
You know, it's been probably 20 years since I saw the Raul Julia Street Fighter. But if memory serves me, I mean, it's a really funny B-grade movie that they're just entirely chewing the scenery on.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
Jean-Claude Van Damme makes a meal out of the scenery. He doesn't just snack on it or just chew on a little bit of it. It's a 9-course meal for him, and he enjoys it.
And he's sharing it fully with Raul Julia the whole time.
Oh, yeah. The only complaint that I have about Street Fighter is that it was Raul Julia's last film.
Why does this happen? Raul Julia has Street Fighter. Orson Welles has Transformer the movie.
Well, in Raul Julia's case, it was actually on purpose. He knew he was dying when he made it, and he was deliberately doing a movie for his kids. Maybe it was grandkids, one or the other, but he was deliberately doing a film aimed at the young audience, basically because he wanted to do something for children. He wasn't known for his family-friendly films, generally speaking.
Yeah, Adam's Family may have been funny and something that a lot of people could enjoy, but it was not for the kids.
Well, I was actually thinking of the fact that other than the Addams Family movies and Street Fighter, can you tell me what else Raul Julia has done without looking it up?
Not off the top of my head, no.
Yeah, that's because he was actually an actor who did, you know, serious films most of the time.
Going back to Kristen Kruick's, I actually did see it. It was on HBO. It was free, so I figured it was worth the price of admission.
You overpaid.
And I was able to fast forward through the last half hour of it, so I only sacrificed an hour of my time.
So, on a Highlander scale of movies, where does it fall?
I would say it probably falls around Highlander 2, the director's cut.
That's high praise, actually.
Yeah.
The hour that I saw of it. When it started getting bad, that's when I hit the fast-forward button.
HBO has a fast-forward button?
Well, I DVR'd it.
Oh, okay.
It was still the same price, either way. I guess when it comes down to it, I'm concerned that this is going to, in its own way, dishonor the memory of the 1980s show. Like I said, I have very fond memories of it. It had two really good lead actors and a lot of really good supporting actors in it, and I just am not seeing that this show is going to live up to it.
I don't think this show is going to even touch the first Beauty and the Beast television show. I really think that target audience and almost everybody who's actually going to watch it was conceived after Beauty and the Beast left the air.
I think it might touch the original Beauty and the Beast, but it's the same kind of touching you were talking about earlier for Phantom of the Opera.
Bad touch. Bad touch.
Exactly.
And to go one step further, Jim, those people like yourself who watched the original fondly and intend on trying the Beauty and the Beast 2012, I think you're going to be so insulted that you will stop watching nearly immediately.
I am kind of afraid of that happening, yes. One of the other kind of strange things about this whole scenario is that the original showrunner of the 80s show is on board working on the new show. So in some ways, that gives me hope that maybe, just maybe, if he hasn't sold his soul to the executive devils, it might be okay. But I don't think that's going to be the case. I think he sold his soul to the executive devils.
Well, my family saw the pilot episode at San Diego Comic-Con and unanimously agree on this one. Thumbs down.
Yeah. One other thing about the original show that they had going for it that this one doesn't is that way back when, before there was Game of Thrones, George R.R. Martin was one of the people that helped create the original Beauty and the Beast TV show. He's nowhere a part of this. Remember me saying that the fantasy aspects of it were gone? I think that was George R.R. Martin's contribution, and with him not being a part of it, all the fantasy goes away.
Seems like a reasonable theory.
Like you said, I'll give it a try. We'll see how long I actually stay tuned in.
As always, we appreciate you listening to TwerpCast. We encourage your feedback. Please write Jim at twerponline.net. We can also be found on Facebook, MySpace, Zanga, and Twitter.
TwerpCast is a production of Timewell Electronic Recording Productions, copyright 2012.
Be our guest. Be our guest.
In the magic vagina.